Carry on my wayward son, there'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest, don't you cry no more.
Ladies and gentlemen, good evening and welcome to a special edition of PZ85 Plays. I am your Game Master, Double H, and a long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, the crew of the Midnight Coterie nearly came to an end, as did their adventures in the Dawn of Defiance campaign. That's actually what we are here to talk to you about, about tonight, and talk with each other about, because we're here just kind of providing a little recap, a little final send-off for these characters and this crew. We are not yet to the final edition, the final installment of the Dawn of Defiance campaign. We decided to kind of take a little breather before we get to that after a monumental previous episode, the penultimate episode of the whole thing. But before I go any farther, let's always, as always, introduce your cast. Playing Harani Tar is the co-owner and creator of Podzilla 1985, Mr. Shannon Young.
No jokes for this intro. Legitimately a little choked up thinking about the journey we've had.
We've also got our Bothan spy, our stalwart Bothan spy, Iris Nay, played by Lindsay Wolfgang.
Hello.
Fused to his couch is Kruskog Zubane, played by Cody Sandusky.
I was going to make a joke to say that I was straight from the blurry zone to not adjust your telephone, but somehow this was ruined by that. So
oh my god, that was whiskey. Oh.
Don't burn that comes out your nose.
You'll be feeling that one for a while, can confirm. And finally, I guess now we properly say goodbye. He's still with us, but I think it's important that we properly say goodbye as we introduce what our second Jedi to be lost in this campaign, both from the man himself, Tanner Calvert, that would be Sigurd Talon, who passed away in a moment of heroism unlike we've seen thus far in this campaign.
Yeah.
I looking at the moment and the organic feeling of it, I felt like this is exactly what Kray did, but on a better note.
Yeah,
what better way for brothers to go out than like that?
Yeah, I don't want to get too far ahead of us here because I know we kind of want to talk a little bit about the whole journey and everything up to this point a little bit. But I can't stress enough that, admittedly, you know, if you go back and listen, Crane's death was almost foretold. Tanner and I had been talking behind the scenes for some time this character falling to the dark side and how close he was to doing so. And, you know, if there would be a good moment for him to kind of, you know, fall into that, basically as we headed into the Empire Strikes Back like section of Dawn of Defiance. So that was mostly planned, but this most recent episode, where Sigurd fell to Darth Vader's lightsaber, saved Harani from turning to the dark side, you know, really, really just out and out sacrificed himself. I cannot stress to you how organic that was.
Yeah.
We've used that word a lot in the written descriptions and in talking about this, but that was not planned. I didn't talk to Tanner about this in advance. He didn't talk to me about it. Legitimately going into those most recent episodes, Shannon and I were the ones that were having the most conversations about behind the scenes things, and it was not about those characters either. It was all about Rainer Baldrige,
the Sex Imperial,
and all of his stuff. Yeah, it was all about his stuff. All of that was unplanned, and so it was an on the fly. Like I give as much credit to these guys as I could give to myself, because you know, yeah, as the GM, it's on me to you know shape the story and take it in the right direction and do what I can to do right by their characters. But I influenced none of that. Yeah. I just put the pieces in play and stepped aside, and these guys took it and ran with it, and it was legitimately among the best I'm 37. 20 plus years that I've been doing tabletop gaming. It's one of those things I will not forget. It's in the top five, at least, if not right up there at the crest of moments that I remember from tabletop games.
I really take pride in the arc that Harani has had over the course of this entire game, but it was always an arc that I myself had planned on telling for myself. Like, I, this was the direction I wanted to go. This is what I wanted to do. And I had my own vision of how it was going to end. For Tanner to become so intertwined in that and to ultimately make the decision that brought Harani to the point that I wanted to bring her to myself eventually made it feel so special. Because it was almost like Tanner got it. He knew what I was going for. He knew what my vision was, and he made it special. He made it mean way more than it would have meant had I done it all on my own. I could not have been more touched by what had happened. Now, that comes from the fact that when we started that battle, and Tanner just rushed straight in and said, "I'm gonna fight Darth Vader and two of these guards." I thought to myself, "Well, he's dead."
No, no. I said, "I'm running through the guards." Vader ran up on me, and I went, "Oh shit!"
I said it after the show, so you guys wouldn't have heard it. I think it was long after we stopped recording when we did that episode last week. But once again, we're at the point where I can start kind of peeling the curtain back a little bit, and you can see a little more behind the scenes. Not only was that moment just super organic and it turned really well, but by virtue of that nature, by virtue of the fact that that is the case, I told these guys there exists another version of that story where it doesn't happen that way. Mm. Tanner, as Sigurd, made that choice. There was the ball was completely in his court. He was able to make whatever decision he wanted to make there. And to be fair, Shannon too, because I had basically paused initiative and just let these characters act. I was fully mentally preparing for this is it. This is how Harani falls to the dark side. And what do I do? And how does the rest of this combat play out? And what happens there? So yeah, there exists some, you know, we're very close to the release of Doctor Strange. There is some multiversal madness somewhere where there is a non-pruned branch where that's what happens. I will always be very curious about what that would have been like, but I fully believe this was the more intriguing and just right way to go.
It felt like a movie. It felt like a movie moment. Yeah. And it was the most movie moment I think we've had in the show. And what I think I told Tanner this after the fact was Harani's whole thing was that the point of everything that I was going for was she couldn't save for that moment. She couldn't save Kraid back then, and she carried that with her. That trauma is what led her down the path to the dark side. Her anger against the Jedi. I mean, she has a weapon called the Jedi Killer because she was so pissy about all of it. And she thought that she could save Sigurd in that moment and make up for the fact that she hadn't saved Kraid. But then Tanner flipped it, and I thought it was even more poetic because Sigurd wasn't there when Kraid fell to the dark side. And now he made amends with his brother by saving this person that Kraid loved. And I thought, that is just beautiful. That is absolutely beautiful. It couldn't have been written better.
I don't want to throw any, you know, cast any aspersions onto somebody else's character. As a GM, I do my best to just put you in the position to do what you want to do with it. But to me, you know, Harani's fall and bitterness and just kind of cynicism all came from, and I want you to talk more about this in a minute because we're going to kind of go character by character.
Yeah.
But all sort of came from all these experiences that have been happening since episode one of this campaign, of the Dawn of Defiance campaign. It's not like I'm like, oh, she's a Jedi. She's fully redeemed. But I do think that was a moment that she needed to see that made her understand that the Jedi is more than this monastic order, more than this group of people who think they're better than everybody else and are trying to desperately rule the galaxy, that they can't manage that. Yeah. That they're more than just, you know, dumb soldiers who run in and they're the heroes and they're the good guys and they're going to save the day. That they really do make those, you know, those kind of sacrifice plays. And I thought that was, again, I think it ended up even just mechanically being better than the alternative, because this was the way that Sigurd gets closure, Harani gets redemption, Vader gets motivation, right? Because, I mean, he mostly just existed there. His motivation was to get Harani. Well, that's clearly off the table now, so all bets are off, and we see that for the rest of that fight, if you go back and listen to that. Speaking of going back, let's take it all the way back. So
2 years back.
Almost 2 years back at this point. The very first, when we first started playing this campaign, I believe it was in September of 2020. And that would have been So before this was before Cody ever joined the campaign. It was just the three.
Shannon, a few chapters before I show up.
Shannon, Lindsay, and Tanner were the first main characters. Groz, in fact, wasn't even around at this time. It was just the three of them on a little thing called Selzon Station above the planet Brintal. And I remember coming into this going, okay, I've run this campaign before. I've run lots of campaigns before. And sometimes I have trouble figuring out, you know, why are these characters here? You hate to go to the classic, you're in a tavern. You're already a team. What are you doing? So I loved the idea that I had read and kind of extrapolated from somewhere of, okay, the characters are all there. So it is kind of you're in a tavern, but they don't know each other. And you cast it to them as to why. The only rule being effectively, you're not evil. You figure it out. And so you guys really did, I thought, in that moment, a good job of just giving basic reasons for your characters to be there and to intervene in a little scuffle. Stormtroopers carry, I'm trying to say carrying, and I don't know why, attacking. They were chasing somebody down. You know, why do your characters get involved in this? And we just went from there. And Harani from the beginning. So Harani, for those who don't remember, was not even called Harani in the beginning.
No.
Yeah. Do you remember her original name?
I do not remember.
Zalata.
Her Zalata. Name was Zalata. And it was a boy. And was masquerading as a boy.
Yeah, supposed to be androgynous. Yeah.
Yeah, that was the other thing. So I want to kind of step aside.
Which we would, Tanner and I went off the rails on that with constantly being like, okay, cam girl.
Yeah, it was.
I forgot about that phrase.
Yeah. As a GM, I'm going to pull a very GM move here, and I'm going to step back, and I'm just going to let you talk a little bit about that character and her journey, and how so much of it has changed and been shaped by this campaign.
I am so proud. Like, it's not many things I'm proud of. I'm proud of Podzilla. I'm proud of my work in CCW. I'm proud of the friends that I have and the relationships I've created. I've always wanted to create a character that meant something, and I've created a lot of characters. Lindsay would say I used to be a writer. I'm still a writer to an extent, but I wrote a lot of characters. I've never had anyone that meant so much to me as Harani Tar, because when she started, I wanted to create somebody that was kind of like me, but not me. So she was a HoloNet is what we said, HoloNet Star.
HoloNet Star, yeah.
Basically like
Holovid.
Yeah, like a Star Wars TikTok, basically. She was a star. She was a celebrity, and she grew up on Tatooine as the daughter of a slave, basically. She watched her mother, you know, perform, and she caught all of this. You know, she grew up in that, not entertainment world, but, you know, being a dancer and, you know, just learning to entertain people, because that's what Twi'leks do. You know, historically, right. Twi'leks are kind of put in that role as the sex appeal and as the dancers, the entertainers. So she befriended another character. This character disappeared, got herself mixed up into the underworld. And when no one cared about her, Harani decided that she was going to track her down. Even though Harani was a big star at this point, celebrity, she was going to track her down and find her, because that was the only person that really meant anything to her. So she finds herself on this space station, incognito, trying to find Ridley. And that is when she comes across these other characters that, you know, changes her as the story went on, from a spoiled cam girl, let's just be honest, a spoiled cam girl, into a capable fighter, into a disillusioned rebel, into a bloodthirsty killer, and then into a steps away from pure evil, because she had so much hatred and cynicism, like you said, into what is now going into her redemption arc. And I am so proud of that storyline that I crafted and that everyone here helped pass along, because you guys could have very easily not went along with it and just said fuck off, but you all helped me grow the character, and I couldn't be more thankful to it. And it was when I started thinking about Harani's journey and Sigurd's journey and Kruskog's journey and Iris's journey that I thought, we need to do an episode like this, because it's no longer the point of, like, we played a tabletop game. This is 2 years of character history, 2 years of adventures, 2 years of development and growth, and I wanted to celebrate that. So that's why we're here.
Yeah.
Well, I also think that with the growth of the characters, like, we've all grown as creators for this too. I definitely feel like I have.
Oh, I think we all have.
Yeah, Tanner, I think you in particular were coming into this with less tabletop experience than pretty much anybody else at the table. You'd played with us on plays for a few other things.
I did the Ghostbusters. So Ghostbusters was the first time I've ever done any kind of tabletop anything. So this was my first time actually getting into like a fantasy style.
And Ghostbusters, you know, if you go all the way back to just as a brief history of plays, if you go back to the beginning of this show, which started, it would have been around April of 2020. We weren't using Roll20, or if we were, we were just using the dice roller, and that was it. We were on Discord, but we weren't using video in any form or fashion. We were strictly recording audio.
I had a girlfriend.
There's a little bit of charm when you go back to those early episodes in that way, but those games in particular, they came from the 80s. They were built for you to not necessarily need grid paper and minis and all those sorts of things. I think they're great in that way, but I also think that some of these along the way need, you know, some additions, and that's what Dawn of Defiance brought to it. But yeah, so Tanner was coming into what a lot of people would look at if you've ever played a tabletop game and go, oh, this is the easiest way to start, because like you said, it's D6s only. The rolls are really simple. You only have a handful of skills here and there, and it's all theater of the mind. And going from that to, you know, bumping up a couple of different things, we played, it's been after we started Dawn of Defiance, but we played 10 Candles here at Halloween that year, you know, which I think, Tanner, if I remember correctly, is still your only like in-person tabletop experience, isn't it? Yeah, and we got to change that.
Yeah, definitely.
My girlfriend was there.
Here it goes.
It was
neck-breaking fun.
I broke my neck looking at it.
When we first got the Dawn of Defiance campaign going, you know, I had talked about, do we want to do D&D? Do we want to do Star Wars? And I remember Tanner saying, you know, Star Wars is interesting to me. I think that would be fun. I'd like to play a Jedi. And I was like, ah, shit. I definitely wanted at least a Jedi in the campaign. I didn't want too many because I'd already run this before. I know what it's like to have more than one Jedi that early on, especially as it becomes problematic. But my bigger concern was that the Jedi are such a specialized class. You know, all the other classes in the core book for this game have analogs to the classic D&D. You know, your scouts are your rangers. Your scoundrels are your thieves, your rogues. The Jedi is such a... You would think it's a paladin, right? It's definitely a paladin character. Except not really. They're kind of good with weapons, but they're also kind of good with powers. They're like the only characters that really get powers. So they're kind of like wizards, but also they're sort of fighters.
Red mage.
And they're a little bit red mage. Basically... But D&D doesn't really have an analog for that. Yeah, that's the thing. Tabletop doesn't really have an analog for that. And so my concern was it's going to be overwhelming. It's going to be too much. And I think, you know, occasionally here and there, I don't want to tell the story of your character, so I'm going to stop myself in a minute. But here and there, you know, we went back and forth on the, like, we got to get the minutia down. We got to get this taken care of and that. But eventually, you know, you were the only one who went through two characters. And... Crade, I think, kind of... Crade walked so Sigurd could run. Yeah. That was the way that I always felt about it.
Yeah.
Crade was the early start. I'm gonna just see what I can do with this character and see what happens.
He was the prototype.
And then by the time that Sigurd came around, it felt like we really had it nailed on. You know, it's not just, I'm going to substitute this other character in to fill in for the guy who died. They really had a full arc of, you know, Sigurd beating Crade's brother and kind of picking up where he left off and trying to kind of make good on what he tried to do. I didn't go into this campaign thinking that I was going to get a big bad from a player. Just full disclosure. If you ever go and read the module, you know, for Dawn of Defiance, because it's online, you can pull it up. And I've talked before about how heavily I've modified it. But Valen Draco, who you guys did run into, is meant to be the through line through every episode. He's meant to be there up to the bitter end. The last fight that you guys had with Sordidum, the name that Crade took on after he became an Inquisitor, was meant to be Draco. It was supposed to be him. And along the way, I just recognized that I'd had such an opportunity with that character to get him tied into your backstories and your, you know, get you guys invested in him, that Draco had kind of fallen to the wayside. So I used him as less of a presence than the module calls for, because Crade had that big an influence on everybody else in the story overall. But I'm gonna shut up. I want Tanner to talk a little bit about his characters, not just me. So take it away.
So, like Hunter said, like, this was my first real adventure into actual tabletop you know, getting into a D20 system, and it was nerve-wracking to start off with. I'm not gonna lie. When I had stated that I wanted to try to be a Jedi, Hunter told me, you know, how complicated it can be, but I wanted to do it. Like, if I was going to do this, I wanted to jump into it feet first. Which I am that Star Wars fan. Like, it's just, for me, it's not completely Star Wars without some kind of Jedi involved in some way, shape, or form. But the using the term that, you know, or, you know, saying, Kraid was there walking, so Sigurd could raise. It's legitimate, because I mean, Kraid was an experiment to the end. I mean, it was just me trying to figure out some of these different. Okay, can I try this power? What's this going to do? What's this ability? How's it going to affect battle in the future? And halfway through, what would be the halfway point for Kraid? I seen these dark side points really starting to stack up, and they were, and again, it was one of those things where these dark side points were coming naturally. Like an event would come up where Kraid would fail something and Hunter would offer that up, and I'd be like, do it.
And that was, just to intervene, that was also a totally organic deal, not something built into the module, not even something baked into the game. It was something that we had kind of joked about, and I went, oh, that's good. That's fun. I think that'd be a good time. And, you know, admittedly, I prayed a little bit on Tanner because he was a novice player, and I knew that I could, you know, I knew I could work with you in that way of, hey, if something doesn't go right, I can just offer an opportunity. To me, that was the most organic the dark side could be in this game. It speaks to you in those moments of doubt and failure and says, I can make this so much easier. Mm-hmm. It was Bray Wyatt at the time. It was just let me in.
Let me in.
Just let me in, you know.
So, sorry, go ahead. No, you're good. I chime in anytime on that, because so me and Hunter never really talked about any of this until like maybe three episodes before the actual turn. I had maybe two dark side points left to go before I lost them. And we were coming up on it, on this big fight. Me and Hunter started talking. I'm like, you know, I kind of want to make another character, because at this point in time, I had figured out how to really flesh out a Jedi a little bit more. I mean, that's to say, I still need, you know, have places where I could work on it. But, you know, I kind of had an idea of where I wanted another Jedi character to go. And Hunter, I don't have the sheet on me, but the original destiny for my for Kraid, I can't remember if I'd made it originally, but I know it had evolved into the fact that there was a Jedi presence out there that he had remembered from the temple that he was trying to reach out to, that he had a connection to.
Yes.
And
yeah. And I'm not gonna lie to you. I prayed on that too, because I wanted it to be, I wanted it to look like it was Denia. So when I introduced Denia, I think that everyone was kind of going, oh, that's his destiny. And then it was like, oh, it's not it. Okay. Not it. Well, where does it go from there? Like, what else could it be?
So, and in private, me and Hunter talked to it, and I brought up that, I like the idea of the fact that because Jedi are taken so early from their families, that he secretly had a brother out there that he didn't know about who was also a Jedi, and that connection he was feeling was with his brother. So when we made the turn, and we started talking, the idea of the turn was the week before that episode, and so I immediately went, me and Hunter had a private session where we started just creating another Jedi. Level wise, it was picking up right where Kraid was dropping off, but we built it from scratch with everything else. He was a dual wielding lightsaber user, all this different stuff. And I don't think anybody else in the party knew about the brother connection until we finally had an encounter with Sordidum. And he looks at Sigurd and says, "Hello, brother." And that was, that moment in the show was just it for me. I loved it.
I knew you'd come.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both have brother. I'm looking at it right now, because I'm not going to lie to you. I have legitimately, there it is. Okay. I don't know that anybody ever caught on to it, or that I ever said it aloud. Sordidum is a Latin phrase.
I think you did mention this once upon a time.
Did anybody ever happen to look it up, or does anybody remember?
No. Nope, because I just called him sodium, and he's salty.
It was sortidum in Latin means something along the lines of like dirty, low quality, like low brow. And to me, like, that was never meant as a bit. The whole idea behind that was that some part of Kraid understood that he had lowered himself. He had debased himself to join the Sith. But at the same time, he did it, and he had to wear it as sort of a mark. Once I got control of him, once he became, you know, anytime a character falls to the dark side, they come under my control. Technically, anytime they die, they come under my control too. But I was more concerned with this in this case. There was no part of me that ever anticipated like a redemption story. I did not want to fully ape Luke and Vader. It's too much. It would have been too obvious, especially for something that takes place right before, you know, that series of films takes place. So to me, and I didn't play it up too much in the moment because it just wasn't organic and I didn't want it to be the case. But I always wanted Sordidum / you know, Kraid to be that kind of, he's not sympathetic. But if you dig deep enough, you can see like the cracks. You can see that none of this was ever just, he's just evil now. Now I'm just an evil guy and I'm a bad guy and I want to rule the galaxy. I mean, he was never involved in empire business, imperial business. Everything he did was with the Inquisitors, was on the side of the Sith, was in the employ of them and to, you know, further their mission. Because at that point he was, if there's one thing that's always bothered me a little bit about when Anakin turns, it seems like it's a little too quick in the prequels to just now he's just Vader. He's
zero
just Vader 100. Now. Deal
zero
with
to
it.
100.
Yeah. What I really love, and Shannon, you and I have talked about this before, that scene where he first turns and the anguish of him. Like, Hayden Christensen does a great job of that line, just saying, what have I done? Just literally looking at his own hands of like, there's no going back now. Yeah. I cannot do anything about this.
My problem.
I have to wear this. This is on me now.
Right. And to me, I wanted that to be even, not obvious, but if you look deep enough, you know, even in his own name, even in the name that he took on, there was this like this sort of soiled concept of a Jedi that he had gone out and tried to do his best, and the universe gave him no direction, but the Sith did. And so he had to kind of play in the mud a little bit to find purpose and direction. But he still knew. Somewhere back there, he still knew, this is not right. I'm not doing the right thing. I'm doing what has to be done.
And I think that plays to like the turn being... So his turn was similar to Anakin's, but at the same time, his turn was due to him basically sacrificing himself to save his colleagues, his friends, the ones he had started to consider family. So I think that lends, you know, and the reason for that turn being good in spirit lent credence to the fact that, you know, he wasn't all bad. There was still something there.
Right.
You know, obviously he was too far past the point of being saved, but there was still something there.
It reminds me of the Lich King from World of Warcraft and from Warcraft 3, because Arthas was a good person who was so determined to save his people that he basically took evil upon himself to save them. And in the end, it turned out that he was corrupted, but it came from a place of, you know, of heroism. He wanted to help, and it was his downfall.
Yeah. The path the Lich King is paved with good intention.
Yeah.
So originally when I came in with Sigurd, I was like, you know, he's a Jedi, so he's still peaceful, you know, in it. But somewhere deep down inside, he has some kind of, at first it's just resentment saying, well, they pushed a Jedi for into the point of turning to the dark side. And then he realizes it's his brother. He holds some kind of resentment there. But at the same time, he's growing closer with these people. And then when he gets to this point where this decision could be made, he realizes this is why my brother made this decision.
Yeah.
You know, he's watched now, but on top of seeing this is why he made that decision, he's now seen that Harani has had this push towards the Force. And again, that's why I asked about that moment where, could I feel anything inside her? Is there something here? And... when you said, you know, you see that little flame, I was like, that's it. This is it. This is,
By the way, I want to mention that Harani was never, my original intention was never to turn her into a Jedi or give her Force abilities at all. I never had any intention of her diving into that. But as the story,
organic,
just happened. As the story progressed, it just felt right. And I just, sometimes we all made decisions that weren't good for the game, but made sense for our characters. Like when Lindsay almost murdered.
That's good for the game still.
Yeah.
I will say this to me to kind of sum it up. It was really fun watching Tanner evolve as a player and also Tanner watching your characters evolve kind of with you. It was a very analogous kind of path. I don't want to overuse the word organic here, but it really did feel like there was this you know, one-to-one kind of connection of I can watch you, you know, go through the game and get more used to playing the game and how it works and what we do, and I can also watch these characters kind of level up on a more metaphysical level in that same way. You know, Kraid was not a bad character. He was a little rudimentary, but the more he got involved in the story and the more we saw that directionless path was problematic for him, the more it was like, okay, then when the brother comes into play, you see that he doesn't make those same mistakes. He does, however, make a lot of, you know, mental mistakes that he doesn't realize he's making. He's, like you said, you know, directly, he's feeling a lot of resentment about the loss of his brother. That's a strong emotion. He's feeling a lot of these, you know, familial connections to the people around him. That's a strong emotion that could be used against him. And I remember in the moment when I thought, okay, so this is what's going to happen. Harani's going to go with him. There's a chance I could double turn him. I could pull Sigurd into this too and just tap into those emotions and have him go after Vader or have him, you know, say, I won't let him have Harani. And he goes into combat with her and says, I'd rather be dead, you know, than her try to you know, turn to his side.
That's what I wanted.
I didn't say it aloud, you know, on the the show, but there's a part of me that wishes that I had gone a little more in depth into what Sigurd was thinking. So, I mean, you know, let me do it now. Not to ever talk for your character, but my thought was that in those last moments, when he you know, retrieves his lightsaber with the Force and goes to try to at least, you know, fend Vader off before Vader ends him, that there's that flash of, you know, seeing his... He was never there when Kraid turned to the dark side, but seeing his brother in that moment of what he went through and remembering, you know, it's that kind of life flashes before your eyes thing, remembering all the times on the coterie with the crew, watching Harani slowly but surely, you know, develop this power, but also not really know how to focus in it, not really know what to do with it, and not quite being able to get her to understand, you know, the way that you were trying to get her to use it. To me, that stuff was all very personal. So I think it makes more sense to say it now. I'm kind of glad, I guess, in the end that I didn't do it in the moment. I think it would have taken away from the moment itself. But I do think it's important that those are the kind of things that I had kind of envisioned as I was putting that together and putting the final X, you know, on the whole thing.
So in my head, it was, which, I mean, you're right on. It was seeing here at this moment, I was getting ready to die. It was hearing Harani offering herself up to the Sith, realizing that she's willing to make the exact same sacrifice that my brother had made, and realizing that, well, that means there's something there. That's out of character. That's okay. There's something there in that character that is realizing this person is important to me. These people are important to me. I'd rather sacrifice myself than let them go. So, because me and Shannon hadn't really talked about it. I was worried he was actually going to make a dark side turn in the show. And I've been fighting against it because we've already lost one character that, you know, I think, you know, in the game, losing one character is great for a story, but to lose two, I think is a bit, not excessive. I thought it was too much. And Harani's had this back and forth story, and I, you know, and seeing she was willing to make that sacrifice for her friends, I thought, you know, let me see what happens. So that's when I asked, do I sense anything in her?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Not to cut anybody off, but I want to make sure everybody has time to talk and that we're not, you know, at it all night. I do
it's
think
not
it's
the
important.
Sigurd show, Tanner. He's dead. We're moving on.
Oh, he's not gone though. You know, there's the luminous beings are we, not this crude matter. from episode one, as I've said before, there were three key characters, and we knew about the Jedi, and we knew about the star, but what we didn't maybe, you know, necessarily start to really get a lot of expansion upon until later was the quiet Both and Spy. I mean, by nature, right? Quiet, you know, someone who kind of lurks in the shadows and kind of does their thing quietly and gets the job done. As Iris, I think Lindsay has taken on maybe a surprising role to her, not to the audience necessarily, as leader.
She's a leader.
I don't know that we really kind of envisioned this character that way. It was always
I always assumed Harani would take on like the leadership role, not Iris.
I desperately did not want to be the leader. I'm so used to being the leader in everything that I wanted to just have my own character where I could do what I wanted. I wanted someone else to be like the hero. I never wanted to be the hero, and Iris filled in the role of hero very nicely.
One of the things I really liked was that early on, the character of Harani was very much still sort of in that role. And I think that was when you guys as players were still kind of trying to figure out what these characters are going to be like and how the game works and what we're doing. So, you know, it's Harani who is well known around the galaxy. It's Harani who buys the ship and is the pilot. It's Harani who really forms the bond with Graz. But all along, it's Iris who's making the level-headed decisions. It's Iris who's not running headlong into battle and who is saying, hey, we really need to investigate this and writing down the clues and doing the information gathering. Again, very true to form for that kind of character.
And when the battle starts...
Which is what I was kind of sticking with, was it's just, okay, I'm here to get this, and then I'm going to get paid. So...
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but when the fighting started...
Yeah.
She started blasting.
Yeah.
Iris,
I think the only person who's harder is Graz.
I'll say Iris and Graz were the only reason we survived a lot of those encounters.
One thing that I apologize in a way for this. I feel bad that it hasn't maybe been addressed as much as I had at one point in time intended it to be, although we have talked about it, is that Iris has a really, really fleshed out backstory. So I came to you guys, you know, the people who listen to the show don't know this. But I came to you guys in advance with an actual like Google form survey of like, okay, here's some things that I'd like to know about your character. Where do they come from? Who are their friends? You know, what kind of place do they have in the galaxy right now? How would they react in these situations? And everybody, you know, filled that out and did a good job of answering those things. And then Lindsay sends me a whole separate thing and is like, oh, by the way, you know, here are full breakdowns of her parents. Here's her family. Here's like some enemies that she has around the galaxy. Here's some things she's trying to achieve, some people she'd be terrified to run into. And not unwarranted. I don't want to make it sound like I was like, okay, slow it down. No,
oh,
it was
easy
great.
There.
I was salivating over this kind of information because this is the kind of stuff that like, you look for in a player. You know that player is invested in that character. Mm-hmm. You know, as a DM, and Cody can back me up on this, that if somebody sends you a full breakdown of that character, they expect, you know, in effect, something in return. I mean that in a good way, not a like, hey, you better do, you know, something for me now, but very much I'm going to put the time and effort into this character. I hope to see a return, you know, on investment in that. And so, again, while we maybe haven't, you know, addressed every single element of that, I have done my best to kind of pepper those characters in along the way. Iris taking over that sort of leadership role and again, very much being super prominent in combat, I wanted her to have those moments to just kind of step in and go, oh, yeah, by the way, I guess the best analog I can think of is Hawkeye. Hawkeye, especially in Age of Ultron. Age of Ultron gets so much shit, but that it's that great moment where they land on his farm, and it's like, oh, this guy has a wife and kids and a family, and there's like, so much more going on. Right, and the character very much is just like, yeah, no, that's how I live. If you guys had ever bothered to ask, maybe I would have told you that these are all the things that are happening.
This is how I live.
You know, we had the sworn enemy in the Trandoshan mercenaries and the parents who were desperately, you know, trying to get her to be part of the Both and Spy network. And I think we spent a lot of time on that, if I remember correctly, coming into maybe the third act. It was like one of those, you know, beginning of the episode, hey, what have you guys been doing since then?
Yeah.
And I had you do a couple of roles. I feel like probably what people don't know most about Iris is we did a lot of stuff off screen that you know, players react to those things differently. I've sent some things to each one of you at some different times about something your character knows or did or whatever, and some of you have gone full bore and read it word for word, or have just told your other character or other players, you know, hey, here's what we did off screen and this is what's going on. Lindsay almost always took that information and went, okay, and then just incorporating it. Like, never said a word I used, but just kind of slipped it into the game, and I remember thinking, like, okay, yeah, I can work with this. I can do something with this. This is good shit. I'm gonna again stop talking and let.
Yeah, I don't stretch my storytelling skills as much as I used to, but like I still have that animation storytelling in me as far as that type of stuff goes. I like our run-in with Dargo was really the area I had to like stretch the most, because it's like, okay, you used to work for him, and a lot of it I'm just like flying off the seat of my pants coming up with stuff like Keshra, I think, whatever that one was. Mm-hmm. I'm just trying to be like, okay, you were a rival of mine, even though we didn't even discuss that part.
Right.
Just kind of going with it. But yeah, I never expected my information gathering for sale character to turn into this leadership. Okay, I'm actually in on, I'm actually like really for what this whole rebellion thing is, and kind of switching from the I want a paycheck to turning into like a loyal soldier of this endeavor where she's kind of sitting at the moment.
Yeah, it's one thing, you know, I've said it before, I didn't want Kray to be a Luke Skywalker. I didn't want, you know, other characters to just be another version of a character that already exists.
Right.
So immediately, you know, I don't want the smuggler or the scoundrel. Sorry. I don't want this guy. Yeah. I don't want it to just turn into Han Solo all over again, you know? And always there's going to be some elements of that. You know, you've got the same occupation effectively, and you've got the same type of era of the universe. But I was glad to see that there was a lot more to Iroh. You know, Han never really does become a leader. He has all these little moments where, sure, he saves the day and he does some good stuff, but it's always at the behest of somebody else poking him in the side of the head and going, dummy, figure it out. Like, get it right. Iris, on the other hand, really just kind of came into her own. I like to think the background version of it, like you said, to add on to that, is she kind of went from being, I'm just here to get a paycheck, to I'd like the universe to continue to allow me to get paychecks. And so maybe I should solve that problem first
before I worry about. And then also surrounded by people that are so involved in their own thing. Like, hey, we still got a job to do here, people.
Right.
Even if it means killing Kraid, Halen.
I didn't kill him. I almost killed him, and he took a dark side point to save himself.
The most infamous role, I think, in the game at this point. Before we go through characters, I feel like it's got to be mentioned. It's you know, we had that star fight. Okay, remind me, was that the end of? It was the end of episode 3, right?
It was when we were in the slave barge. There was like a slave barge that we had so to like was, not collide with another ship.
It was the end of episode 3. It was the Queen of Air and Darkness.
And Kraid had stolen
a
starship from one of Darga's
headhunter.
It was a headhunter.
Prototype X-Wing, basically.
Yeah.
And man, there was never a more timely role, a more untimely role, I guess I should say.
Seriously.
Than the one that I just assumed was going to blow his ship up.
Yeah.
Because Kraid could have died right then and there.
Yep.
Right.
There's another multiverse thing where what would have happened if Iris Nay had murdered Kraid Halen in space? Where would we be?
Someday we'll do one of these and it'll just
be that. Kicked me off the ship.
Yeah.
I can just see us going back and doing what if episodes of
things. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We do like a little 10-minute, you know, what happens here if that.
What would have happened if Piney was the one that became a Jedi instead of Ronnie?
The cover of the book is just him, but in the robes with the lightsaber, just going, well, how did
And a jug of space moonshine.
I also feel like we referenced Piney too much to not just at least briefly explain. At the beginning of episode 2, if you go back to that point, Shannon took a week off, and it was an unfortunately untimely week because we were all set to go.
Was this when I broke up with my girlfriend and I needed some
time? It was, yeah.
Okay.
And so we talked to a couple of other people who have played, you know, games and stuff with us before, and Jesse Kimball, who had, you know, previously been part of the Ghostbusters Adventures and had been part of the Horrors of Perryville, or at least the first one, said before he headed off to Mexico.
Yeah. Mexico.
I was like, hey, I wouldn't mind jumping in. I'll put together a character for you. And I was like, yeah, all right, dope. And he put together a Bothan scout, so we had another Bothan in a different role than anybody else had filled. But well, he was this sort of backwater, you know, guy. He was very different from Iris, from a backwater planet. And that's where he learned to hunt and everything. And he was just this, you know, that was his little catchphrase. Well, hey, all day, and he had this accent, and it was funny. I mean, and it worked.
It was funny at first.
None of us were expecting the accent when that was the first thing out of his mouth. Not at all.
The first time he did it, even I was like, oh, that's what we're doing. All right.
Introduce himself. Well, howdy.
For the first couple of installments of episode 2, it's the one with Dargus Palace, Piney kind of doesn't really sub in for Harani. We find out later that that's not the case, but he joins in as part of Bail Organa's organization. And then a few installments in, Harani reveals herself to have been hiding in Dargus Palace all along, and then they team up, and then Piney at the end of that adventure goes off elsewhere. And we joked and referenced about him all this time, you know, about how, oh, he joined up with another, you know, part of Organa's venture, and that he's out doing other things for them, or, you know, maybe he's off in the Outer Rim, we don't know. And I told myself at one point in time, I'm never going to bring him back. I'm not going to do that without talking to Jesse and having him come in. I would feel bad if I did it. And I told these guys, again, at the end of the last episode, if you go back and listen, you'll hear, you know, all Blue Squadron coming in to surround them to help them make a run on the Sarlacc project. I had my numbers, and I was trying to decide who's flying them and what ships they are. And I was down to, like, the last couple. And I remember thinking, son of a bitch, I'm going to add Piney, aren't I? Because I've gone through every episode. I found all the NPCs I can think of that I want to add. And I thought it would be really funny, not only that, to have him show up in a Z95 headhunter, because he wanted his Imperial scalps, right? That's what he wanted. So, of course, he's in a headhunter. I had to pull the trigger on that one. I thought it was too much fun not to. Cody, before you jump in, I do want to very briefly talk about Graz. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on him. Graz is a character that I also really, really do love and am kind of proud of in a way, mostly because I don't hate the idea of the DMPC, I think, as much as a lot of other tabletop players do. A lot of people don't like the idea of the DM also playing a character. The only reason Graz even came to existence in the first place that you guys needed combat help. That was strictly what it was. And this module is designed for approximately 4 to 6 players, 4 to 5 players on average. So there were just the three of you. We hadn't talked to Cody yet about getting in, or I think Cody, you were still playing D&D with another group, if I remember correctly at that time.
Yeah,
I was still or at least on those nights. Mm-hmm. And I went, you know, I'm looking at the party makeup. Jedi take a little while to get going in terms of combat. Harani, as a strict noble for a long time, was really good at the battlefield manipulation, but not so much at the shooting.
She was a skill checker.
Right, yeah. And then Iris was also still kind of coming into her own, and I went, you know, I could just make a soldier. I could just give him, because every party kind of needs like just a soldier character to soak damage and deal damage and just be there to help in combat. So rather than making it a random NPC, I put together, I always had kind of wanted to do a Wookiee for this game anyway. I played a soldier droid at one time, but the droids feel almost a little overpowered, and I went, no, I'll make a Wookiee. It'll be fun. So pulled the name Groznik out of the suggested names in there, put him in, let him run. Never expected him to be so popular, but I think what really helped was that I kind of just, the longer that the game went and the less necessary he felt for combat, like he was still helpful, but he wasn't like necessary. I can pivot into that kind of comic relief. It's all the dumb stuff that I want to say, but I don't want to ruin the flow of the game. I just let him do it as a player. Yeah, exactly. The Vox Box, among my favorite things I've ever done with a character, I am hungry.
I will help.
I am hungry. I will help.
Or like, we know that it's a common Wookiee name, but even when that one Star Wars trailer game dropped and they're like, get him, Gross. And then it's a large, dark colored Wookiee that comes out. Like, that was just fabulous.
They clearly
the game is still not out, and I'm still very excited about it. The game itself looks okay, but I really want to at least, I want a demo or something. I want to play just long enough to actually get to play as Groz. You know, when I first started playing tabletop games, all of my characters were generally very red mage-esque. Like, I would have played a Jedi if I'd been playing this, you know, Saga Edition at that time. My very first character for anything ever was a half-elf sorcerer in D&D 3rd Edition. Basically, somebody who could do a little bit of everything. I wanted the magic, I wanted the weapons, I wanted the skills, I wanted it all. And in time, I've noticed if I go look at, you know, my progression of the types of characters I play, I really like playing just, like, big, strong, dumb characters.
Beefy boy.
Like, I have slowly but surely moved away from a lot of skill checks. Groz is good at a few things by virtue of his strength and dex being really high. And he's trained as a pilot strictly because of the coterie. Also, I know we laugh about the Vox Box all the time. My favorite Groz running gag is that he's a great pilot and a shitty mechanic. And so he's always welding some random thing onto the side of the ship because he wants to look super smart. He's got the goggles and he's got the torch, but it's just like he's like cutting a hole on the side and somebody keeps having to like, no, don't do that.
And everyone knows it. Everyone knows. Like, they see that he's just trying real hard. So they, Hermione just lets him do it. Right.
What are you doing?
He's very serious. Okay. He's so serious about that.
No one calls him out on it because he's
just so
loving.
No one has the heart to tell him.
Yeah.
he ain't ripping my arms off.
So Groz legitimately is a character that I will not forget. And I have, fortunately, again, with a DMPC, you're always a little nervous as a guy running a game, having to also run a character and worrying you're doing too much. I will always be really grateful that he never outstayed his welcome, I don't think. Maybe it's not for me to say, but I never felt like it was at a point where
crucial
he was too much.
Yeah, he's a quintessential part of the party.
We'll never know where he attached that monocle chain.
Never. You'll never find it. You still don't know where he keeps that holdout blaster pistol that he pulls out of his fur occasionally.
And on a serious note, you know, circling back to my own self here with Hermione, Groz was an integral part of Hermione's storyline from them growing close to each other and then splitting apart when she went down her dark side path and she came across, you know, Raynard Muldrake, who, you know, shout out to Raynard. He never got his flowers. He deserved them. He was such an important character that I feel like I didn't get to flesh out enough. That's my fault. I didn't talk enough about him.
Bad joke there. I'm gonna leave that to myself.
I know what you're gonna do. We all know what you think, Smithers. And now in the final episodes, Hermione and Groz split apart so hard after being best friends, and in that last episode when everything went to shit and Hermione knew that she had to make a decision and she. Groz is screaming at her, and she just says, you know, like, one more time for old time's sake, and they're on the same page. Who knows for how long? Maybe they won't survive the next chapter, the last episode. Who knows who will survive the last episode, but they found a little piece together before the end. That was important to me, that they came back together.
I don't think I ever told you this, and I kind of feel bad because now I'm going to break you on the show with it, but you remember around the time they kind of started going those separate ways, Hermione was very much leaning into the everything is awful and I'm just going to do everything I can to get in and out of this versus, you know, Groz kind of having a redemption arc. He was introduced as this very stoic, you know, soldier-like character who was just there to punch people and get the job done. And slowly but surely, you know, became a little more, he discovered his humanity, became a little more human-like. It was around that time that you guys started doing, you know, prestige classes and everything. And Groz's prestige class as an elite soldier then slowly but surely turned into an enforcer. He was taking a lot of those bodyguard-like talents, the things that he could use to protect people. And I always flavored that as Groz felt like he had reached a point where he couldn't protect her anymore and she didn't need him. And so he was behind, you know, not really behind her back because they were, again, spending less time around each other. But he was, you know, going and getting training in how to, you know, provide cover fire and to keep people behind him because he hoped that she would, you know, need him for that again one day. And so he needed to be ready. And that was...
And she did.
Why I did that.
And she did in the end.
And it came back together.
Yeah. In the end, when she was, you know, blinded by rage at Raynard and her whole like she was just out to kill him. She was so pissed off at him. Graz is the one that ran through and finished him off when Harani was hurt, because Reynard almost killed her in the first shot. Like,
yeah,
Reynard blew her away, and Graz ran in and saved the day.
Not today.
Yeah, that was what a bad role for me, but storyline was fantastic.
He's had that power for so long, and it was the first time I really got a chance to use it, you know. And so mechanically, it worked. Also, along with the story of her of him literally being able to, you know, pull the Secret Service move of like dive in front of the bullet, basically. But it's so much cooler because then you also get that, you know, he soaks the damage, comes up and gets ready to fight again. I would be remiss if I did not give Cody Sandusky an appropriate amount of time to talk about Kruskog Zumane. So Kruskog is the most recent addition. He came into the game later than anybody else. It was if I remember right, Cody, about episode 5, right? Like halfway through?
Hold up. So just to rewind a little bit, August 4th, 2020 when this campaign started.
The day after my birthday?
It was even earlier than I thought. It was
August 4th. Damn. Yeah, I'm on the Podzilla 1985 website. August 4th, 2020. I thought it was
September. Wow.
My entry was at Core of Corruption, which is episode 4 or 5, I'm trying to remember.
I believe it's 5, if I remember correctly, because that's the Nizon invasion, the Nazarin and all those guys.
And by the way, that's March 24th, 2021. So I came into this campaign a year and a month ago, which is insane to think about, that you guys were already 6 months and more into that campaign
before I ever
rolled into it.
When I started talking to Cody about coming in, we had been so a long running tradition since we started this show has been, or since we started this campaign anyway, at least, has been at the end of each act. You know, Dawn of Defiance has 10 full episodes, and the episodes that we upload to you guys are installments. At the end of each act, which was at the end of episode 3, at the end of 7 again, you know, split it up into 3, we would kind of take a break. And usually it was lucky that would fall around a time where, you know, either like me and Sarah were going on vacation, or it was around Christmas time. And Cody has always stepped in and run a D&D game for us. And they've been, you know, varying different little campaigns and in some cases varying characters, different characters. And it was around that time that I went, well, why the hell is he not just playing Star Wars with us? Like, you know, rather than just cutting him loose after that little, you know, incursion, I bring him back in here. So we started talking about Kruskog and what he would look like. And one thing I have, I'm trying to keep myself from talking too much and not letting you guys talk. But one thing I've always really appreciated about Kruskog is that, like I said at the beginning of this, anytime you get into a Saga Edition game and you start introducing multiple Jedi, things get a little hairy more often than not. Like, because people end up stepping on each other's toes and there's powers flying left and right, and it's a little bit difficult to kind of, you know, parse out multiple Jedi. You don't see that a lot in the you know, films, other than when you have like pairings of them. And we said from the get-go, that's not what I want to do, because Sigurd and Kraid kind of already have their thing. I don't want to pair up another Jedi with them and muddy the waters. So Cody came to me with a pitch for Kruskog, and before I even got to the end of it, I was like, yeah, okay, this is perfect. This is exactly what we're doing. And I think if anybody came into this with a real handle on the character, because of course Cody had tabletop experience too, there was so much of that character that was just ingrained in him from the beginning. Again, I'm going to stop talking and let him talk about it. I'm actually also going to get something to drink, but I'm listening. So you go right ahead and tell the story of Kruskog Zumane.
Yeah, so the whole point of Kruskog coming into this campaign was, as was noted by Hunter, we already had a Jedi, and by that point, a second Jedi. So there wasn't really a need to come in with, for lack of a better phrase, the template for a Jedi is your lightsaber-wielding combat expert taking charge in any opportunity given. And Tanner was filling that role very well. I mean, obviously, he's talking about Sigurd coming in as a dual-wielding lightsaber, a duelist. I mean, literally, if you talk about the game mechanics. And that wasn't what I wanted for my character. With Star Wars, I hadn't seen it yet by no fault of anybody. I think it's just a weird gap to fill into, and I think one that a Jedi works in, is that wizard or warlock role that you would have, or a spellcaster role inside of Star Wars. And you know, it's in no small part, the joke in the back of my head is, you know, the space wizards, like old Ben Kenobi. That's literally what, you know, people joked about him being. And that felt more appropriate for Kruskog, especially in light of how he fit into the story, which at that point, the crew of the Midnight Coterie going to Coruscant, it was finding somebody that was under the tutelage or involved with Senator Organa, but hiding in plain sight, blending on the inside of this really grisly, dark planet. And few better races in the Star Wars canon work well for filling in that void than a Zabrak, which, peeling back way long ago, was a race I had used already for our one campaign or our one session
of
Star Wars. Yeah, many, many
years
ago.
My characters were buddies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was a Zabrak.
You were a Bothan then too, weren't you?
Yes,
if I
was.
Correctly. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll say, yeah, multiple of us came back with the same characters.
That's because I had fun the first time. So
yeah. Same thing. I enjoyed what a Zabrak could do because it was similar enough to a human, and also, admittedly, it was trying to find a race that you didn't see depicted as a Jedi very often. I wanted to be somebody that would blend into Coruscant, that would be different, and someone that you wouldn't expect, even on just a first impression level, to be involved with the Resistance or with the Rebels. So being able to come in with that very space wizard, someone very intently focused on serving that side of the Jedi and going through now being a Force disciple is what my prestige class is here at the end. That was always the template. I wanted a guy who was very stoic, very keen to tuning himself to the Force. The whole story of Kruskog, if you haven't been along for the whole campaign, is that he is someone who was involved in the Jedi Order right before Order 66. He is someone that even at the point we come into seeing him in Episode 5, he's still what you would probably consider a Padawan. He's not had the tutelage of a master for long enough to really gain a bearing on anything that he has. And gods love it. For lack of success in my dice rolls, I think that's played very well at times throughout the campaign, is that Kruskog, when he succeeds well, but when he fails gloriously. And I think that plays well to the character of still not having that refining, and it's only come by trial and error and literal forced experience that he's kind of come into this developed character of utilizing powers. Being someone who wants to achieve the mission to protect, but also to not step in that leadership role. He's someone who's strictly there to support the end goal. He wants to see the damage of Order 66 undone and to protect whom he can that's left, but also serve as an assistant to accomplishing the end goal, which is to start pushing back against the Empire. And that's been a lot of fun to play.
I love the idea of the word that I always ascribe to Kruskog is consular. He's not just a counselor, you know, he very much does serve a lot of that role with Organa and his administration. But you know, the idea of the Jedi sort of watchdogs, the sentinels, the consulars and all that. I think that Kruskog always really has filled that role really well, even when he was, you know, sort of younger in his kind of Jedi learning. Again, that, like you said, that really sort of stoic character, the one who might get a little, what's the word, perturbed, I guess, with the shenanigans, with the, oh, come on, are we doing this again? But then is also fully capable of doing something about it. That's the best part.
Yeah.
You know, he might not fully jump in and be, you know, in for a penny and in for a pound with everything, but he's able to make it work for him in the end, and that's what's always been, you know, even if it's not happening that way in the dice rolls, the character doesn't have to know that.
Right.
The infamous Kruskog system.
Indeed.
Which you say that, but I want to point
reaction.
Out that, I was just say, at the when it counted, when it mattered the most, when we're up against Darth freaking Vader, Kruskog force chokes half the room and keeps them off of everybody else, and it was the most and
shut down Vader's lightsaber.
Shut down their lightsaber. Yeah.
Oh my god, you talk about the most rewarding moment of the entire campaign. Yeah. I think for me was the last two combat sessions to be able to show up and be like, okay, this is what it's all been building up to. The moment it matters, he can finally unveil it, or he can finally get it to work.
I'll never forget Cody's
while I whip this out.
Oh. Cody's legitimate face when it worked. Like, I'm serious. Like, I'm watching it on camera, and he's like this. Like, he
couldn't believe it.
He couldn't
believe
it.
I remember saying, Kruskog does it, looks at his hand. What in the shit?
Oh, that was so cathartic and rewarding to finally work. Because I was worried. It was like, okay, cool. Here's the pratfall. Here comes the Keystone Cops one more time. Forget.
there have been, and we've talked about a lot of them, I think, over the course of this, and we had intended this to be a half-hour show, and I knew once we got started it was never going to happen.
Yeah,
so I'm not going to shut it down immediately. I do want to very briefly, like, we've talked about a lot of great moments. Is there anything that we have not mentioned so far from the campaign that stands out to you guys as something that you'll, like, you know, carry from, whether it's character-specific or just from the adventure overall that sticks out in your mind?
I mean, I'll step away from the serious for a moment just for the phrase, goddamn Raynard Sprainard Sex Imperial.
The Sex Imperial. the meme of the year.
Oh, my God.
That's and by the way,
from the fact that, have we ever said it on the show, like, where it came from?
No.
Like, why it happened?
I don't think so. No.
I didn't know.
Okay, so you may have to help me with this. Here's what I remember. So Raynard Muldrake gets the name from the X-Files episode Jose Chung's from Outer Space, right?
It's
Jose
Chung's episode.
Version.
Yeah.
Yes, it's his version of
Fox Mulder.
Fox Mulder.
Right.
Right. Because Renard is Fox in French.
Right.
And so when Shannon said, I forget what it was, but I think you or me or one of us or we both had found a picture, it looked like, of David Duchovny, but in an Imperial uniform.
And I made it.
Yes.
I made it.
But didn't we see one before, too? I know the one we used you made, but I could have sworn that's why you were like, no, this is why I want to do this.
I think I took his head when I was at work at Gaming Grounds, and I just took his head and put
sure
it on.
You just took his head and stuck it on
I stuck
Imperial
it on an Imperial
uniform.
Agent, and I was like, holy shit, that's awesome.
I thought there was something we had seen, but I obviously, that's the token. For those of you who can't see the board, that's the token that we've been using for him this whole time.
Yep.
So, you know, Raynard Muldrake, Imperial Agent, was this very cool concept of him being, you know, kind of an X-Files kind of guy there, where he's you know, working with the enemy and he wants to believe that there's more to be had here. But remind me why the rest of it happened. I know part of it was the picture of Duchovny from the Simpsons.
That's what I thought. It was just the Simpsons pose of him in the underwear pose.
And then Sprainard comes from the Tim and Eric bit. Sprainard Kruger. You know, he wants the bees on his wall. So happy birthday, Spray. I'm disappointed in you.
I'm pretty sure it was Kaz. I'm pretty sure it was Kaz that came up with it.
Because it was a horse time.
It was horse time. And he was talking about the goddamn Sex Imperial. And
we must have done the 69 bit. That has to have been.
Yes, no, that's exactly what it was. That part I remember. 69, and it spiraled, or, you know, spiraled.
And it became Raynard Sprainard.
I so desperately want there to be another Star Wars campaign set during the same era, maybe even a little bit before, where I can play as Raynard Muldrake this time and, like, lead up.
Where part of your name came from. It was when we were on Aldrete's, the party train. And we had to have fake names.
Yeah, that was part of his cover story, his identity.
He was a womanizer. He was a...
Well, because then there was also, what was it, Mulder and, like...
A Mulder and Scully.
Or something.
Oh, no, it was Scally. And I immediately wanted to
Mulder
change that name.
Mulder and Scally. And you were like, boy, I hate that.
Well, I wish I had thought of a different one than that one.
To throw one out there in terms of just combats, there were a lot of great combat encounters over this whole thing. There have been, and you know, some have gone better than others, and that a lot of that is almost always on me. If there's one that sticks out to me, though, that was great for all the wrong reasons, it was the Arisen Jedi in the temple.
Oh, no.
That you guys were caught in that corridor.
That was awful.
If I ever thought there was going to be a total party kill, it was that.
I thought we were going to die from the zombies.
And I checked and I checked and I checked again, and all of those characters were perfectly leveled. I looked online, are these characters overpowered? Nope. This is how they're supposed to be. Part of me could figure out. It was just a lot of bad rolls.
Mm-hmm.
But I really thought, oh my God, these guys are all going to die here. And I have no cool way of being like, well, that's how the campaign ends.
I'm pretty sure one of those was the case. Like, even when we were rolling damage, like half of our damage was ones, and it just wasn't doing anything.
It was really bad. If you're looking for that episode, it's episode 4, Echoes of the Jedi. I do not know which one or which installment it is. I'm sure in the description we probably wrote something about, you know,
like that
and almost the whole party dies. You should come along and enjoy.
That episode particularly also stands out to me because that's where I could not, like, climb down the stupid shaft, and that's where we decided Iris is afraid of heights because I just could
Another
not
organic
roll right.
moment that just fit in. God, I forgot how much fun that train episode was. I feel like that whole episode was a blast. Just the build up to it, and then the campaign, the combat encounters at the end, where a lot of them were like skill-based check or skill check based and all that. Yeah.
I didn't take this seriously, honestly, at first. I did not take it seriously, but I didn't have any real attachment to it. When I love the character of Harani, and the first episode, I was just kind of playing it because I just wanted to play. And then, of course, you know, I had my relationship issues, so I took, and I wasn't going to come back. I was like, I'm done. I don't really want to do this. I was in a bad mood. I was going to quit Podzilla altogether. In fact, I think I did quit Podzilla altogether because I'm like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm out. I'm tired of doing this. I'm tired of being a celebrity or whatever the hell I'm not. But it was really, as the story progressed and poor Jesse got dragged into it and then immediately evacuated when he realized I came back and Cody came on board and we all came into our own, that I started to get so attached to everything and every story became important to me. I think the one that stands out to me the most, or at least one of, is that scene where we find I'm trying to remember the exact stuff. It's when we first meet Cody, or maybe right before we meet Cody, but the Imperials are surrounding us. Everyone's dead. It's just a bloodbath, and I thought we were all going to die right there. I thought that was when Reynard was going to come in too, and you surprised me, and he didn't come in yet. that one always freaked me out.
I remember that.
Yeah.
That was from episode 5. You're talking about, again, Cody mentioned the Core of Corruption, I think, was the one. No. First to Strike. Episode 5 is the First to Strike. 6 is the Core of Corruption.
Okay, yeah.
But this would have been 6. It would have been Core of Corruption. What Shannon's talking about there was a Jedi safe house, because this was also, this was a pretty brutal moment for Harani. This was the one and only time up until the end here that she was reunited both with Ridley and Narada, the other minion.
Which was also
Ridley had been hiding out. Yeah, Ridley
she was just
had
a side
been hiding out with the resistance group, the rebel group that was there, and you guys were sent off on like a little sort of side mission of trying to get back off the planet. And by the time you came back, there was a full bloodbath. There was a Imperial strike team that came in. That was another pretty deadly encounter, as I recall.
Yeah.
Didn't lose anybody, but got real close to doing so.
The whole Sabacc tournament.
That
was one of my absolute favorites.
So fun to listen to. And
that introduced Narada as just a side random like henchman that we ended up sparing. I think Tanner cut her arm off, if I remember correctly.
Yes, because she was left for a while.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that when I took the abilities where I could have
She lost her strong hand.
She got a better one, though.
You basically turned her into Nebula.
Because every time Hunter and I talked about it, I'm like, I could have a minion, but I wanted to have one minion. And I wanted this minion to stay. But like every time she would die...
You have so many minions.
She was squishy.
Yeah, she was super squishy.
Well,
we started putting like moderations on her and like turning her more
she's
and more
a cyborg.
Cyborg. Yeah.
Yeah. Every time, the way that talent works is supposed to be, every time that you lose that minion, after a certain amount of time, you just get another one. And it's just a random henchman, you know, thug type character. And Shannon was like, but wait, what if it wasn't? What if we just graft new parts onto the old one over and over and over? Like, because again,
there was one point that we thought she was dead. Like she was just laying there on the ground.
She was dead a couple times.
She was dead. She fell out of a cruiser in the middle of Coruscant, if I remember correctly.
The whole thing where you guys, you know, like took her hostage and brought her back to the casino, the hotel, that was a DM moment where I'm sitting there going, oh, God, I didn't plan for this at all. All right.
What the hell do I do with this?
I'm just making stuff up. And it just, again, eventually all the pieces fell into place. It was also, I think I mentioned in a write-up of it, because this is back when we were using the Podzilla Reddit a lot, the subreddit for Podzilla a lot.
Rest in peace.
No, it's still there. It won't go away. That's you can't delete it. When I had run this campaign before for my wife and a totally different friend group, which we never got to finish, she was playing a Mira Luka Jedi who was using the Force basically to influence the roles. Yeah. At the time, I had no clue of how dark side points work. I was very green as a Star Wars DM. She 100% should have been completely turned by the end of that deal. So I fully had the rules down pat when we got into the Sabacc tournament, thinking, all right, let's see how far they can get and if they can actually win. And sure as shit, Harani still managed to win the whole damn thing. On top of having like a regular income as a noble with a wealth talent.
Yeah.
So hence the Midnight Coterie, hence the ship.
Mr. Peanut, Baylan.
The whole thing, the droids.
Yeah.
Groz, I don't know that I've ever even gotten to use it, but Groz has had a speeder bike in the cargo hold for like... multiple episodes now, like a brand new one that he just Yeah. Well, I mean, if you go down there and look at it now, it's brand new, except it's got a bunch of little, like, random welded parts on the side for no reason.
He's installing things.
He was customizing it.
He was customizing. They don't do anything.
Yeah.
And in fact, I'm pretty sure he punctured one of the fuel tanks at least once doing that. But it's fine. It'll be fine.
And and to me, that brings us to, you know, we got to cut this. We got to cut this off at some point. We could reminisce all night. Yes. But this brings me to go ahead, Tanner. Go ahead.
Well, just real quick, I wanted to talk, like, one of my favorite episodes was one of the more recent ones, like, with the death of Kraid, just that ending where Sigurd has to end his brother, and then...
Oh, Sword of the Empire, episode 9, yeah.
And then back on the ship, we're back there, everybody's just kind of winding down from it, and then Sigurd and Harani have in that moment where they actually sit down and talk about Kraid.
Yeah, that was a hint of that Harani still had something good in her, because she actually sat down with this Jedi and had a conversation about, and she told him about his brother. It was a sweet, sweet moment. It was really kind of touching. Yeah.
Yeah. And Shannon is right, though. At some point in time, we gotta cut this thing. Did you have one more thing you wanted to add?
Well, I was just going to say, like, you know, part of the reason I wanted to do all this is because, again, like, it kind of hit me that these characters we've had for, you know, in some of our cases, almost 2 years. In Cody's, you know, case, a year plus.
Year.
And now we're going to say goodbye to them. And we're not just going to say goodbye to them, but as we saw in the last episode, when Sigurd died, that... It there's no guarantee that they're going to get out of this alive. So I started to think about, you know, I mean, we may be saying goodbye to them permanently in the history of this show. Now, in the history of this story, you know, Sigurd went out a hero. Sigurd went out of the ultimate sacrifice, but that's not to say that Harani's going to make it out in the end or Iris. I mean, it's really emotional.
A whole coterie may go before we're done.
Right.
Yeah.
This may be a World One type scenario.
If you're not up to that place, I mean, just to quickly recap, at the very end of the last episode, after escaping the platform that was holding the Jaws of the Sarlacc Project, and getting on the coterie and escaping the explosion of that Golan defense platform, a huge hole ripped in the side of the Star Destroyer. And so Lady Aldrete's plan is dangerous and desperate and reckless, but it is to send Blue Squadron, now with the leader being the Midnight Coterie, inside to take out this thing's reactor once and for all. And so they've got all their old allies there at their sides, including Ridley, Nereida, again, Piney. Coming back after so long. Serona O'Keefe, their original transport driver, the Banshee there. The Squib Collective, which I think is my favorite creation I've ever made of anything, flying that Y-tie. And so that's where it's all coming down to. I fully anticipate at this point, I kind of did the plotting and the figuring out, and even if we go a little long, it may be maybe the longest episode we've done yet. We'll see what happens. But the next time that we get together, and that you hear from us, it will be the final episode, the final installment of the Star Wars Dawn of Defiance campaign. So that's it, guys. Basically, you're getting the end wrap-up before the end. That's what you're going to hear next time that we come your way. So, as always, please, you know, go back and check out all the previous episodes at Podzilla1985.com. If there's one reason I'm glad that archive exists, that's the one. That all of this exists there. You can go back and listen to every episode in every form. You may not be able to see all the maps, you know, but it's all there. Everything is available to you to check out. And Shannon, we got a lot of other good stuff coming up this week as well.
Yeah. Tomorrow we've got an all new Pro Wrestling Unscripted with myself and Hunter. We're going to talk about some releases, some nonsense. Thursday we've got an all new After Dark. And then Saturday... our very own Mandy Kennedy is getting married. So,
oh shit, is that this weekend?
That's this weekend. I'm performing. I'm performing this. I'm marrying her. I'm not marrying her. I'm Justin Smart's marrying her.
Two.
Yeah. I'm performing. I'm performing the ceremony, and then
there you go.
I'm gonna go home and eat pizza. So actually, I'm not. What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna eat. I did HelloFresh. I'm gonna eat that for the next week, and then I'm fasting for a month straight. I'm not going to eat for a month straight. Ooh. Wait,
I think this is the first time that these people are hearing that. I heard it last night. Yeah. Lindsay, I'm sure, knows because she was shaking her head before you even started.
1 month. Bob and I are going to do it. 1 month. I know I'm doing it.
I'm going to be such a jerk, and I'm going to sit there and eat ice cream in front of you so that you will eventually eat again.
I'm a fuck supermodels. I don't know. I don't know what I'm saying. All right,
well. we also, for the record, we did not necessarily say it'll be next Tuesday. That, I think, is the latest that you will hear this.
Yeah.
But it may happen sooner. It may probably will get uploaded, you know, next Tuesday, Wednesday, whenever is the most convenient after that. But yeah, the final episode is coming your way soon. And again, for the record, Plays is going nowhere after this. We have a lot of stuff on deck. I've got a Fallout book that's been sitting in my basement for a year now that I would love to try the Fallout game from Modiphius. Yes. I do plan on doing at least a couple episodes of that just to kind of get into the wackiness of it, see how it goes.
I'm looking forward to the return of the great characters of Shannon Young, Tanner Calvert, and Lindsay Wolfgang in the continuing Perryville saga.
That is also in the works. I am actively looking for the next installment of that. So if there's one thing I kind of feel bad about, just as a quick aside, the only episode of Plays that you guys have never heard, because I don't consider Tin Candles to be part of that. That was just, you know, effectively a party game. But we played a version of the Horrors of Perryville that even my players didn't know was that until it was over last summer. We got the group together. We got everybody together. It was, let's see, Shannon, Tanner, Lindsay, Jesse.
That was it.
Am I missing somebody?
I think that was it.
Yeah. Played a game that was set in the 70s and there were werewolves and all sorts of other stuff. And they didn't know until the end, as the end credits were rolling, that, you know, here we are 40, 50 years later, and suddenly it turns out that was all set in the same area, that was just the progenitors of those characters. We did that in person, and we talked about recording it, and we didn't. So I've mentioned it a couple times on the show, but we're definitely going to be playing some Fallout. We're definitely going to return to the Horrors of Perryville with the Savage World system. And then, in terms of our next big campaign, well, Cody Sandusky's been working on a little something.
Yes.
He's got a mind for us.
Sody Kanducky was literally reading the book for this on his iPad when you guys beckoned him to come here. I was reading through some stuff. Boys and girls, we're going to have some fun, cruel irony in life that the biggest chicken on this fucking network is going to be running Curse of Strahd, a D&D 5e campaign.
I have a friend from college that is going to commission me to do some D&D stuff later in the year, art-wise, and I told him you were contemplating running that one, and it's one of his favorites. Yep. So.
Yes. It is a classic... It's a classic campaign from the original system that's been brought forward to 5e, and I suggested it to Cody to run for a while because I just want to take a little break from DMing after I do
a well deserved break after this entire incredible saga.
Thank you. But also it is, I sold it to Shannon as saying it's D&D by way of classic horror movie monsters. It's vampires. It's werewolves. Yeah, that's it. It's, you get to be a Belmont, basically.
So,
yeah.
And I will be a Belmont. So.
Oh, I know.
So yeah, that's all coming your way in the near future. But for now, it is late and we got to go. So guys, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Next time you hear from us, the final installment of the Dawn of Defiance campaign will be coming your way. Until then, for Shannon, for Lindsay, for Tanner, and for Cody, I am your Game Master Double H. May the Force be with you, and we'll see you soon. Later.